Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. We've got a lot of good stuff to talk about. She's our good friend. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Hello there.
It's good to have you here. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Pardon me?
I said
Pardon
Merry
me?
Christmas.
Oh, Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa.
No, you're supposed to say Merry Christmas back to me.
I am? Oh,
we're
sorry.
We're both Christians when I say it specifically to you.
Oh, because you know I'm a Christian.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And you know I am.
Well, I was trying to keep all your listeners in mind.
Well,
they might not all
say,
celebrate
when
Christmas.
When we speak to them specifically, we'll say Happy Holidays.
Okay.
Because
okay.
Because we don't know, and we want to be tolerant.
Okay. I'm glad I have you to kind of guide me through this
I'm your, I'll take you by the hand and guide you through these choppy waters.
John. No touching.
Speaking of things that get people's indignation up about, I have something that I'm indignant about right now.
Oh, here we go.
Today, CNN, and I'm really getting down on CNN, and I know there's some people that over there at CNN you're down on too, but today they were talking about the elections in Iraq, and you know how on the television they always have to show some kind of a video of it. You know, if it's a manufacturing story, they show some video of manufacturing going on or whatever, some soundbite. So instead of showing, they were talking about the elections. But instead of showing all the footage that they have of people voting in past elections with their finger in the air, with the ink and all that, which if you're talking about an election in Iraq, wouldn't that be the thing that you'd think people would be a good video to show? With the
fingers
story?
With the ink on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures in the papers and things
exactly,
like that.
Exactly. But instead of showing that, CNN was saying today they're holding the election in Iraq. And while they were saying that, they were showing footage of people shooting guns at each other. Now, this is file footage. This isn't what's going on today.
Uh-huh.
This is just file footage of violence in Iraq. But they didn't say that. They didn't say this is file footage of violence. They just didn't even talk about what was being shown on the screen. They just talked about the election in Iraq.
Well, what's interesting is, didn't they have to kind of lock down the country before the elections started?
Well, what they've done, one thing I know that they've done is they've secured the borders. They won't let anybody in and out, which is smart. They've also made today a no driving day. You can't drive. And I think that's smart, too.
Interesting. So I guess for most people, the polls are within walking distance.
Yeah, there are 6,250 polling stations in Iraq. I bet you didn't know I knew that, did you?
Wow, that's a lot.
There are 7,700 candidates.
Gee.
From which 300 and something will be elected.
Gosh.
From over 200 parties. How about that?
200 parties?
Over 200
wow.
parties, that's right.
I wonder if a lot of these are local, or I wonder how that works.
I think it is. I think they are local. I think the way this thing is, I read an article and they were talking about how loose this federation is,
okay.
and how strong the provinces are going to be.
Okay.
So it sounded pretty like, you know, not. It's kind of sounded, the article I read sounded a little bit like the United States.
Wow.
You know, in terms of the power of the states, is what I meant, states' rights kind
yeah.
of thing. But anyway, I know you you join me, Joan, in wishing the Iraqis the very best today as they go to the polls and elect a permanent government.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so anyway, I just had to get that off my chest. I'm very
You feel better now?
I do in a way, but it just irritates me for people to use that kind of subtle I don't know. It was not subtle, but they wanted it to be subtle, but it wasn't very subtle. And that was CNN, by the way, folks, that was doing that. Joan, let's move over and talk about the letter. How about that?
Hey, what a great idea.
What a novel idea, huh? Global trade won't yield much, Kipling
Global
says.
Trade talks.
Talks won't yield much.
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
Well, a world organization had goals for those talks and wants an agreement by the end of next year. But the idea being to end barriers to trading in things like agriculture and services. But they're not going to quite get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been trying really hard, haven't they? They've been trying to get global trade. There's been a lot of bilateral trade talks going on, too, right?
Absolutely, particularly with the United States and various trading partners.
And some of those have been made, and more of them will be made, I think.
Right.
But the global thing, that's a pretty aggressive and maybe unrealistic thing I think it's important to continue to try to have these global trade talks, but it's probably not realistic to think that we're going to get the world to come together and say, okay, let's all agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a high bar.
And don't forget, I'm sure there'll be a verse or two of Kumbaya in there somewhere.
Yeah. Sure, if you say so.
But trade volume is going to continue to grow. That's a good thing, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Even though, as we say, even though these trade talks won't get as far as the WTO had hoped, they're still going to get at least half a loaf, if not more, if trade volume is up. That's the good thing.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and another thing, Joan, that you point out is that the U.S. will stay on the leading edge of trade expansion. And even though some sectors are facing increased competition from imports. But Joan, you know, I was just thinking about in all this about the automobile industry and how that's changed over the years. You know, at one point in time, automobile coming into this country impacted the trade. Foreign
right.
cars being shipped into this country was had a negative impact on our trade balance.
Yes.
Imbalance. But today, I guess I can't say most, because I don't know the percentage, Joan. Maybe you do. But a bunch, I'm going to say, that's a highly technical term there, a bunch of foreign cars that people drive, foreign manufacturers that people drive, are made in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's a huge difference. I think you've got plants in Ohio, South Carolina, and elsewhere that are operated by foreign, my Honda, I think, was made in the United States, mm-hmm. and it made me feel a lot better about buying a foreign car to know that it was made by U.S. workers.
Well, and now that's an interesting thing. And even though this is a little bit of a tangent off of trade, I think it's an important thing to observe. It's so interesting to me to observe the way the automobile industry, how the two worlds, the two universes of that industry in the United States today. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that some more and a lot more important things to come with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 20 after. Stay with us. Hi, folks, it's Jim Blassingame with a question for you. Did you know that Office Depot has an online technology superstore? It's called Tech Depot, and you can find it online at www.techdepot.com. Tech Depot has over 100,000 competitively priced technology products, including all of the top technology brands. In addition to desktop computers and laptops, you'll find wireless products and home networking, digital cameras and camcorders, plus the latest in storage media. And if you're looking for the latest software solutions, there's an excellent chance that you'll find what you're looking for at TechDepot.com. Also, Tech Depot offers you the ability to customize your new computer using our simple step-by-step process. You choose the processor, memory, hard drive, and other components that fit your individual requirements, and Office Depot will take care of the rest. And you can track your order right online. All of this and more is waiting for you at www.techdepot.com. Thanks again, Office Depot, for helping us take care of business.
Hi, I'm Arnold Palmer, and I've got a couple of questions for you business owners hungry to become business champions. Are you confident your people are committed to your vision? Ever wish you had a business coach watching your back and cheering you on? If you're seeking proven strategies for how your company can become known as one of America's best small businesses, turn to Administaff.
That's right, Arnold. I'm Dave Anderson, president of Anderson Fire Protection here in Maryland. And Administaff strategies have increased my team's productivity, giving me a nice boost in my profit margin. They also help me compete with big companies by enabling me to provide employees with retirement services, health care, and other benefits. I really believe Administaff's people want my company to win as much as I do.
Talk to the pros at Administaff. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Administaff.com. Small business is good for America. Administaff is good for small business.
Consumer Focus, I'm Matt Kelly. Last month, the Zota virus dealt a crippling blow to some of the world's largest companies. Now, small and mid-sized businesses are wondering if their IT networks stand a chance against the threat of viruses, spam, and more. IBM's Mike Regal.
More than 90% of all virus outbreaks now start with email. And amazingly, half of all the email sent is spam. And a quarter contains pornographic content. What this means is that small and mid-sized businesses can't be as productive or competitive as they want, and it damages their reputation. In the process.
Regal recommends that even the smallest of businesses can afford to implement big business strategies when it comes to email security.
Antivirus and anti-spam programs are extremely cost-effective. If you're looking for added protection, you can use an outside vendor to easily manage your email security, and that allows you to focus on your core business operations.
For more information on email security, visit ibm.com/businesscenter/email. That's Consumer Focus from IBM. I'm Matt Kelly.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, when we went to the break, we were talking about the U.S. automobile industry, which is not the same industry that we had 20 years ago, is it?
Boy, that's true.
It started with, I think the very first plant was a Nissan plant in Tennessee.
I think that was
the very first one.
Okay. Because I know that there's like a Honda plant in Ohio, and isn't there a BMW plant in South Carolina?
And there's...
I'm not saying they're as old as that one,
I'm just thinking of others. I'm talking about 20 years or so ago.
Yeah, right.
Or so, and I think the very first one may have been Tennessee, and now there are, as you say, South Carolina, Texas has got some, I think. Alabama's got three or four, including some parts companies. Including a Mercedes, including a Honda, including a Hyundai, but my point is that that's the 21st century automobile industry, and then we've got north of the South, we've got up in the what they call the Rust Belt, up in the Midwest, we've got the 20th century automobile industry.
Yeah.
The 21st century industry is thriving. The 20th century industry is about to collapse, in the companies, I should say.
Yeah, boy, you're depressing me.
Well, it's just isn't it interesting though? You gotta, if you just back up a little bit. I'm not making a value judgment one way or the other, folks. I'm just pointing. I'm just saying that it's interesting to watch that industry literally operate in two universes, and the difference, Joan, the primary difference between the two universes is the northern Detroit based part of the industry has all this 20th century UAW baggage.
Yeah.
And the new companies don't.
That's right.
And it's interesting to see how this is being affected, and I don't think the automobiles, I don't think that the problems with the automobiles, I mean with the companies, are transferring to the automobiles. I own two Fords, which I bought new in the last couple of years. So I'm not concerned about the quality of their products.
Well, yeah, I think 10 or 15 years ago there was a problem, but I think the American automakers really worked on those and have solved them so that they are competitive in that respect with the foreign automakers. But as you point out, the difference in terms of union versus non-union is really huge.
And bringing it back to the global trade issue, Joan, if those companies, you know, a lot of Lou Dobbs, who I like to point out is, I think, is dangerous on the outsourcing issue. I don't think he spends very much time talking about insourcing. You know,
oh, right.
Which is what we're talking
right.
about. The
no, he's pretty much a one-note wonder.
It's pretty
there.
Much all about outsourcing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But,
oh,
but
yeah.
this insourcing is good. But I guess the point is, with regard to the trade, if these companies weren't bringing their factories here, our trade imbalance would even be worse, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure.
So that's kind of interesting. Joan, another point that you guys make in your letter this week
mm-hmm.
is about the fact that our trade imbalance could be helped significantly if the Japanese economy and the European economies would pick up a little bit.
I know. We've been carrying them for, I guess, quite a while now.
Japan for 15 years.
Gee.
And
well, and they are showing signs of life now, so
Japan's
that maybe that will happen.
Japan's economy is right. coming around.
Right.
Europeans, not so much.
Well, yeah.
We need those people, we need their consumers to spend money and to buy U.S. goods, don't we?
Right.
And they're not doing that, so that's very interesting. Joan, let's move over and talk about the forecast, the current forecast on, you've got some energy.
Energy,
forecasts
right.
here. Talk to us about those.
Well, do you want the bad news or the bad news? Well, we say crude oil is on the way up between now and with these are all these forecasts we're showing, I guess, at two-month intervals and then a 6-month interval. So we're saying crude oil is about at $60.60 a barrel now, and it's going to go up by a dollar by February and go up by almost $3 by July.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that's typical, isn't it? The summer driving season.
Oh, the
season,
summer driving
it always
season.
Goes up.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah,
but you know, Joan, I think we're looking at never seeing, and I say never. Never is a long time, but I don't think we're going to see. I think if things settle down in Iraq and the speculators get out of that market a little bit, which I think they will eventually, I think crude oil will come down below $60 a barrel, but it won't. I don't think it'll ever be below 50 again.
No, and I was just in my gas station filling up and rejoicing that I think I was paying $2.15 a gallon, and then I remembered, you know, it was just a couple of years ago that it was just barely above a dollar a gallon,
right.
And I just don't think I'm not even sure we're going to see $1.50 for a long time.
It's pretty perverse to be proud yeah. of, to be excited about a $2.15 gallon yeah. gas.
Well, $3 was getting pretty scary.
That was getting scary some of these gas stations have a limit where when it goes over $50 on your credit card, it cuts off. You can't even pump gas beyond $50.
Ooh.
And it's not my credit, folks. It's just the way they do it.
Sure.
I know that's what you were thinking,
sure.
Joan. Stand by. Quick break. Right back after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administrat. Since I began broadcasting the show in 1997, part of my contract with you has been to introduce you to only the very best people, companies, and products that I can find. IBM fits that profile 100%. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know by now, IBM is my sponsor in bringing you this show and all of my other small business resources. Take it from me, IBM has done a great job of developing the kinds of products and services you and I need to grow our small businesses and that help us gain a competitive edge through technology. You can find all of IBM's small business offerings at ibm.com/business center, including a free electronic newsletter, special offers, and online advice on helping you make the right technology and e-business choices. I hope you'll say thanks to IBM for helping me help you by giving them first shot at your technology and e-commerce business. That's www.ibm.com/business center. It's a great small business website.
Hi, I'm Arnold Palmer, and I've got a couple of questions for you business leaders out there who are looking to become business legends. Are you tired of shouldering the burdens of paperwork and liabilities? Have you got a strategy in place to take your company to the top and stay there? Well, if it's a question of becoming one of America's best small businesses, the only answer is Administaff.
That's right, Arnold. I'm Bob Elfenbaum, CEO of Asynchrony Solutions here in Missouri, and Administaff has played a key role
role in my company's success strategy. They handle all my human resources needs. They help me provide my employees with big company benefits like healthcare and retirement services, and they've equipped me with proven strategies that have improved my productivity and my bottom line.
Talk to the pros at Administaff. Call 800-465-3800 or visit administaff.com. Small business is good for America. Administaff is good for small business.
Hi, folks. It's Jim Blassingame with a question for you. Did you know that Office Depot has an online technology superstore? It's called Tech Depot, and you can find it online at www.techdepot.com. Tech Depot has over 100,000 competitively priced technology products, including all of the top technology brands. In addition to desktop computers and laptops, you'll find wireless products and home networking, digital cameras and camcorders, plus the latest in storage media. And if you're looking for the latest software solutions, there's an excellent chance that you'll find what you're looking for at TechDepot.com. Also, Tech Depot offers you the ability to customize your new computer using our simple step-by-step process. You choose the processor, memory, hard drive, and other components that fit your individual requirements, and Office Depot will take care of the rest. And you can track your order right online. All of this and more is waiting for you at www.techdepot.com. Thanks again, Office Depot, for helping us take care of business.
Hi, Jim Blassingame here. I want to tell you about the best business planning software on the planet, Business Plan Pro by Palo Alto Software. One of the things that makes Business Plan Pro easy to use is the Plan Wizard. The Plan Wizard literally leads you through setting up your plan. If you can point and click, Business Plan Pro and the Plan Wizard will help you get your business plan on paper and working. Oh yeah, their after-the-sale support is the best in the business too. If you'd like to see what several real business plans look like, go to bplans.com. That's B-P-L-A-N-S.com. From there, you can link to their main site, paloaltosoftware.com, if you want to purchase and download one of their products. Or you can talk to a live Palo Alto person at 1-800-433-1397. That's 1-800-433-1397. And be sure to tell them the Small Business Advocate sent you.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been hanging around already today, well, thank you for that too. And I know you're getting smarter by the minute, aren't you? We got some great stuff lined up as we continue our visit with our good friend Joan Pride. Joan, we're still talking about by the way, Joan's with the Kiplinger Editor. She's senior editor there. Joan, we're talking about the forecast that you have for energy. We already talked about the fact that you're forecasting crude to be above 60 the rest of the year, or at least through June, maybe as high as $63. Natural gas. Now, when we say these numbers on some of these other examples, Joan, like natural gas, people don't have any frame of reference for that, do they? I mean, we understand $40, $50, $60 a barrel oil, but $15 per million BTU is not something that most of us think about, is it?
Well, that's true.
Because of natural gas.
Yeah. That's right.
So your current is just under 15, but you guys say by July it's going to go down. Now, is that the reverse effect of gasoline?
I would think so, yeah.
And so it's the price goes down?
Right, I think so.
Yeah. Regular gasoline, you're saying, is going to be as high as $2.50 this summer?
Yeah. Well, again, though, see, we're saying it would go up about 8 cents between now and February, which isn't bad. Mm-hmm. And then you get a spike in the summer. But again, maybe it's the summer driving season.
Right. Heating oil, still about $2.50, $2.60 a gallon.
Yeah, that looks like it's staying pretty stable.
Yeah, and electricity's staying pretty stable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's so maybe that's not too bad. But it's just that we don't like the trends of any of these. We'd like for them to be going the other way, don't we?
Well, certainly, absolutely.
That's the unfortunate part. Joan, let's move on over and talk about a little bit on the economy. The Fed raised rates for the 13th time.
Yeah, a lucky 13.
Yeah, 4.25% Fed funds rate.
Right.
That makes prime 7.25.
Right.
And I'm sure that the buttons were ready to be pushed at banks all across the country to get that increase in prime up.
Absolutely.
As quickly as possible. And see, that makes, Jonah, I'll remind everybody, that makes the money that small business owners borrow cost them more, closer to the 10% range.
Right.
Because as you know, Joan, as you've heard me say many times, small business owners don't live in the world of prime interest rates. We live in the world of prime plus.
Prime plus, yeah.
Prime plus one, which is 8.25. Prime plus two, which is 9.25. And the dreaded prime plus 3, 4, and 5.
Right.
I don't even want to do the math on that, Joan.
Right.
But that's where we're going. And the thing is if the Fed is fighting inflation, Joan, they've got something to fight because apparently that's real, isn't it?
I think it is, sure.
The reports that I'm getting from our economists show that they actually got a little frightened about how much inflation has gone up in the last couple of 3 months.
Oh, see.
And so that's what they're looking for. The question, though, Joan, and you have this in your crystal ball, don't you, about whether they're going to raise rates anymore.
Right. Well, we're saying that that an end to rate hikes is near, but it's not here yet.
It'll be interesting because, you know, Joan, in January, when the Fed meets again, the end of January, that's Mr. Greenspan's last hurrah.
Right.
And Mr. Bernanke will be taking over there. Ben Bernanke will be taking over as the Fed chief. You know, what do you think? Is it going to be a little unseemly for him to raise rates on his last? I mean, talk about you know, turning a skunk loose in the party, at the Tea Party, you know.
Well, that's true. But now remember also that this letter was written before the Fed meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had the Fed meeting, and the markets have been reacting as if they think that the inflation fight is over for now, that they won't be raising rates again for a while, or they're close to the end. But from what the Wall Street Journal said this morning, you know, not so fast.
One of the reasons I don't think that that's the case, Joan, is because I don't think we've really experienced the payroll increases that we're going to have.
Okay.
I think we've started to realize some of the price increases because in a recent NFIB poll that we covered on the show, Bill Dunkelberg pointed out that his respondents were saying they're able to raise prices, which is a good thing for small business owners. That helps with our profitability. But so I think prices are coming up. We're seeing that, and that's contributing to inflation. But with the demand for workers, I think we're going to see an increase in payroll prices, and that's the thing the Fed watches just as ardently as the price controls. All right, stand by. Quick break. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Price. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Arnold Palmer, and I've got a couple of questions for you business owners hungry to become business champions. Are you confident your people are committed to your vision? Ever wish you had a business coach watching your back and cheering you on? If you're seeking proven strategies for how your company can become known as one of America's best small businesses, turn to Administaff.
That's right, Arnold. I'm Bob Elfenbaum, CEO of Asynchrony Solutions here in Missouri. And Administaff's strategies have increased my team's productivity, giving me a nice boost in my profit margin. They also help me compete with big companies by enabling me to provide employees with retirement services, health care, and other benefits. I really believe Administaff's people want my company to win as much as I do.
Talk to the pros at Administaff. Call 800-465-3800 or visit administaff.com. Small business is good for America. Administaff is good for small business.
Hi, folks. It's Jim Blassingame with a question for you. Did you know that Office Depot has an online technology superstore? It's called Tech Depot, and you can find it online at www.techdepot.com. Tech Depot has over 100,000 competitively priced technology products, including all of the top technology brands. In addition to desktop computers and laptops, you'll find wireless products and home networking, digital cameras and camcorders, plus the latest in storage media. And if you're looking for the latest software solutions, there's an excellent chance that you'll find what you're looking for at TechDepot.com. Also, Tech Depot offers you the ability to customize your new computer using our simple step-by-step process. You choose the processor, memory, hard drive, and other components that fit your individual requirements, and Office Depot will take care of the rest. And you can track your order right online. All of this and more is waiting for you at www.techdepot.com. Thanks again, Office Depot, for helping us take care of business.
Since I began broadcasting the show in 1997, part of my contract with you has been to introduce you to only the very best people, companies, and products that I can find. IBM fits that profile 100%. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know by now, IBM is my sponsor in bringing you this show and all of my other small business resources. Take it from me, IBM has done a great job of developing the kinds of products and services you and I need to grow our small businesses and that help us gain a competitive edge through technology. You can find all of IBM's small business offerings at ibm.com/business center, including a free electronic newsletter, special offers, and online advice on helping you make the right technology and e-business choices. I hope you'll say thanks to IBM for helping me help you by giving them first shot at your technology and e-commerce business. That's www.ibm.com/business center. It's a great small business website. Welcome back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest, and she's with the Kiplinger Editors, and I encourage you to go to their website at kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. It's a great site. Joan, you guys have some pretty cool publications, don't you?
Sure do.
The Kiplinger Letter is the one we work out of. That comes every week. And you got some biweekly letters there, too, don't you?
We absolutely.
Well, go ahead. Tell us.
Oh, well, okay. This used to be your gig, but I'll take it over. I don't mind. Well, as you know, the flagship is the Kiplinger Letter. I work for the Kiplinger Tax Letter, and then we also have the California Letter and the Agriculture Letter.
And those come every other week or
biweekly,
whichever way you prefer.
Either way.
And also, you got a magazine, too, don't you?
Absolutely. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. It comes out every month.
Yeah. And you can get the letter, by the way, either of these letters, not the magazine, but the letters you can get by electronic. You can get them by email. They send you a link, and I go there and pick it up quickly. And I also get mine in the mail. They'll also mail it to you if you want, and I encourage you to check that out. And is the 30-day free trial still available, Joan?
The Blassingame free trial, absolutely.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay, good deal. Joan, let's move over on page 3 and talk about Congress.
All right.
Don't underestimate the clout of a small band of Republicans. That sounds like an insurgent group, Joan.
Right.
What are you talking about there?
Well, the GOP moderates are, we call them sitting in the catbird seat. They're, you know, it's sort of like Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. They're kind of the swing votes.
Moderate,
you have the polarized
moderate.
Left and right, and then you have the moderates in the middle kind of calling the shots.
Moderate. Is that like another name for a wimp?
Your words, not mine.
I also think about the term mugwump.
Okay.
You know, mugwump was a term that was used politically for the first time.
That talks about people who have their mug on one side and their wump on the other.
Well, exactly right. But they also, the effect of mugwumps was that they have the ability, they're a small group that has the ability to control the course of events.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about with these guys, isn't it?
Yes.
So they're kind of mugwumps.
Exactly.
And what are these mugs wumping about? What is it that they're going to be affecting?
Well, we're seeing
Taxes.
War-related issues, budget cuts, taxes, lots of stuff.
Well, the tax reform thing is a concern, and I know that I'm concerned about it, because the question is whether they're going to extend some, like for example, the dividend and the capital gains rates, the cut 15% of a couple of years ago. Are they going to extend it or not, Joan?
Well, the good news on that is it doesn't expire on December 31st.
Right.
The things you mentioned.
Another year or so, doesn't it?
Right, which is good, because there's other things that do expire on December 31st that it's looking like Congress will not have time to get that done, and we'll have to come back and reinstate them retroactively next year, which opens up a whole can of worms for your listeners, particularly in terms of the work opportunity tax credit and the welfare to work credit.
Right, right. Also, one of the things that you guys point out is that Kiplinger says Congress will fix the alternative minimum tax. What is that all about?
Well, as you know, the alternative minimum tax has started to bite lower and lower levels
millions
of income, because it was not indexed for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems has been that as Congress approved new and different tax breaks over the last few years, they were not exempted from the alternative minimum tax as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of add those back in when you're figuring your AMT.
Exactly.
But the so-called Band-Aid, that we call it, is this legislation that keeps expiring that allows those items to be exempted for purposes of the AMT. But that little Band-Aid is expiring at the end of this year.
And are they going to fix that, or are they going to extend it?
Well, they're going to fix it, but I don't think, we're afraid they're not going to fix it till next year.
Hmm. Well, what needs to happen is the AMT needs to go away.
Totally,
it needs
yes.
to be banned,
that would help.
Totally, because it serves no purpose from its original purpose. It doesn't even exist and hasn't existed, folks. In about three weeks, the original purpose for which the AMT was created will have been eliminated for 20 years, Joan.
Yes.
We're still being taxed on something for something that wasn't even possible for us, you know, for the purpose of being taxed alternatively. That opportunity went away 20 years ago.
And well, I can make you feel even worse if you'd like.
Go ahead. I love this.
Well, members of Congress are saying, yeah, but to get rid of the AMT, it's very expensive. It would lose a lot of revenue. So they're talking about taking away other tax breaks or reducing tax breaks, such as the mortgage interest deduction, to pay for getting rid of a tax on people that shouldn't have been imposed on most people in the first place.
All in favor of the flat tax, please raise your hand.
Well,
you need to start reading Steve Forbes' book, folks. The Flat Tax Revolution, I think, is the title of his book. You need to start reading that. And, you know, his point is we ought to be able to send our tax return in on a postcard. What do you think, Joe?
Well, it would be nice.
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
A little unrealistic, but it would be nice.
We've got to get this drug, which is the tax code, is the manipulation drug of politicians. We've got to get that out of their hands, and it won't be nearly as much fun for them. But we've got to get them to quit manipulating us with the tax code, and that's basically what they're doing right now. And you know what else, Joan?
What?
Not only are they doing these things for the wrong reasons, they're not even good at it. You know, I mean, they're not even good.
Yeah.
I think they don't even understand all the things that they're doing. It's like a bunch of, who was it? Was it Reagan? It says a bunch of drunken sailors. he was so, I mean, I'd forgotten that somebody else has already said that. It's the thing that pops into your mind quick. It's a bunch of drunken sailors up there. It's amazing. Ten Till. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us.
Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, when we went to the break, we were talking about the U.S. automobile industry, which is not the same industry that we had 20 years ago, is it?
Boy, that's true.
It started with, I think the very first plant was a Nissan plant in Tennessee.
I think that
was the very first one.
Okay. Because I know that there's like a Honda plant in Ohio, and isn't there a BMW plant in South Carolina?
And there's...
I'm not saying they're as old as that one,
I'm just thinking of others.
I'm
talking about 20 years or so ago.
Yeah, right.
Or so, and I think the very first one may have been Tennessee, and now there are, as you say, South Carolina, Texas has got some, I think. Alabama's got three or four, including some parts companies. Including a Mercedes, including a Honda, including a Hyundai, but my point is that that's the 21st century automobile industry, and then we've got north of the South, we've got up in the what they call the Rust Belt, up in the Midwest, we've got the 20th century automobile industry.
Yeah.
The 21st century industry is thriving. The 20th century industry is about to collapse, in the companies, I should say.
Yeah, boy, you're depressing me.
Well, it's just isn't it interesting though? If you just back up a little bit, I'm not making a value judgment one way or the other, folks. I'm just saying that it's interesting to watch that industry literally operate in two universes, and the difference, Joan, the primary difference between the two universes is the northern Detroit based part of the industry has all this 20th century UAW baggage.
Yeah.
And the new companies don't.
That's right.
And it's interesting to see how this is being affected, and it'll be I don't think the automobiles, I don't think that the problems with the automobiles, I mean with the companies, are transferring to the automobiles. I own two Fords, which I bought new in the last couple of years. So I'm not concerned about the quality of their products.
Well, yeah, I think 10 or 15 years ago there was a problem, but I think the American automakers really worked on those and have solved them so that they are competitive in that respect with the foreign automakers. But as you point out, the difference in terms of union versus non-union is really huge.
And bringing it back to the global trade issue, Joan, if those companies, you know, a lot of Lou Dobbs, who I like to point out is dangerous on the outsourcing issue. I don't think he spends very much time talking about insourcing.
You know,
which is what we're talking about.
He's pretty much a one note.
It's pretty much all about outsourcing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But this insourcing is good. But I guess the point is with regard to the trade, if these companies weren't bringing their factories here, our trade imbalance would even be worse, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure.
So that's kind of interesting. Joan, another point that you guys make in your letter this week is about the fact that our trade imbalance could be helped significantly if the Japanese economy and the European economies would pick up a little bit.
I know. We've been carrying them for, I guess, quite a while now.
Japan for 15 years.
Gee.
And
they are showing signs of life now, so that maybe that will happen.
Japan's economy is coming around.
Right.
Europeans, not so much.
Well, yeah.
We need those people. We need their consumers to spend money and to buy U.S. goods, don't we?
Right.
And they're not doing that. So that's very interesting. Joan, let's move over and talk about the forecast, the current forecast on. You've got some energy.
Energy,
forecasts
right
here. Talk to us about those.
Well, do you want the bad news or the bad news? Well, we say crude oil is on the way up between now and these are all these forecasts we're showing, I guess, at two-month intervals and then a six-month interval. So we're saying crude oil is about at $60.60 a barrel now, and it's going to go up by a dollar by February and go up by almost $3 by July.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, that's typical, isn't it? The summer driving season.
Oh, the summer driving season.
It always goes up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, Joan, I think we're looking at never seeing, and I say never is a long time, but I don't think we're going to see. I think if things settle down in Iraq and the speculators get out of that market a little bit, which I think they will, eventually. I think gas will, fuel, petroleum, I should say, crude oil will come down below $60 a barrel, but it won't. I don't think it'll ever be below 50 again.
No, and I was just in my gas station filling up and rejoicing that I think I was paying $2.15 a gallon, and just and then I remembered, you know, it was just a couple of years ago that I was, it was just barely above a dollar a gallon,
right.
And I just don't think we're, I'm not even sure we're going to see $1.50 for a long time.
It's pretty perverse to be proud of, to be excited about a $2.15 gallon of gas.
Well, $3 was getting pretty scary.
That was getting scary when you when you know some of these gas stations have a limit where when you when it goes over $50 on your credit card, it cuts off. You can't, you can't even pump gas beyond $50.
Ooh.
And it's not my credit, folks. It's just the way they do it.
Sure.
I know that's what you were thinking, Joan. Stand by. Quick break. Right back after these messages. This show is brought to you by IBM, Office Depot, and Administrat.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been hanging around already today, well, thank you for that too. And I know you're getting smarter by the minute, aren't you? We got some great stuff lined up as we continue our visit with our good friend Joan Price. Joan, we're still talking about the by the way, Joan's with the Kiplinger editor. She's senior editor there. Joan, we're talking about the forecast that you have for energy. We already talked about the fact that you're forecasting crude to be above 60 the rest of the year, or at least through June, maybe as high as $63. Natural gas. Now, when we say these numbers on some of these other examples, Joan, like natural gas, people don't have any frame of reference for that, do they? I mean, we understand $40, $50, $60 a barrel oil, but but $15 per million BTU is not something that we most of us think about, is it?
Well, that's true.
Because of natural gas.
Yeah. That's right.
So your current is just under 15, but you guys say by July it's going to go down. Now, is that the reverse effect of gasoline?
I would think so,
much, and so it's the price goes down?
Right, I think so.
Yeah. Regular gasoline, you're saying, is going to be as high as $2.50 this summer?
Yeah. Well, again, though, see, we're saying it would go up about 8 cents between now and February, which isn't bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a spike in the summer. But again, maybe it's the summer driving season.
Right. Heating oil, still about $2.50, $2.60 a gallon.
Yeah, that looks like it's staying pretty stable.
Yeah, and electricity's staying pretty stable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's not too bad. But it's just that we don't like the trends of any of these. We'd like for them to be going the other way, don't we?
Well, certainly, absolutely.
That's the unfortunate part. Joan, let's move on over and talk about a little bit on the economy. The Fed raised rates for the 13th time. I think.
Yeah, a lucky 13.
Yeah, 4.25% Fed funds rate.
Right.
That makes prime 7.25.
Right.
And I'm sure that the buttons were ready to be pushed at banks all across the country to get that increase in prime up.
Absolutely.
As quickly as possible. And see, that makes, Joan, I'll remind everybody, that makes the money that small business owners borrow cost them more, closer to the 10% range.
Right.
Because as you know, Joan, as you've heard me say many times, small business owners don't live in the world of prime interest rates. We live in the world of prime plus.
Prime plus, yeah.
Prime plus one, which is 8.25. Prime plus two, which is 9.25. And the dreaded prime plus 3, 4, and 5.
Right.
I don't even want to do the math on that, Joan.
Right.
But that's where we're going. And the thing is if the Fed is fighting inflation, Joan, they've got something to fight because apparently that's real, isn't it?
I think it is, sure.
The reports that I'm getting from our economists show that they actually got a little frightened about how much inflation has gone up in the last couple of 3 months.
Oh, see.
And so that's what they're looking for. The question, though, Joan, and you have this in your crystal ball, don't you, about whether they're going to raise rates anymore.
Right. Well, we're saying that that an end to rate hikes is near, but it's not here yet.
It'll be interesting because, you know, Joan, in January, when the Fed meets again, the end of January, that's Mr. Greenspan's last hurrah.
Right.
And Mr. Bernanke will be taking over there. Ben Bernanke will be taking over as the Fed chief. You know, what do you think? Is it going to be a little unseemly for him to raise rates on his last? I mean, talk about you know, turning a skunk loose in the party at the Tea Party, you know.
Well, that's true. But now remember also that this letter was written before the Fed meeting. Mm-hmm. Now, we've had the Fed meeting, and the markets have been reacting as if they think that the inflation fight is over for now, that they won't be raising rates again for a while, or they're close to the end. But from what the Wall Street Journal said this morning, you know, not so fast.
One of the reasons I don't think that that's the case, Joan, is because I don't think we've really experienced the payroll increases that we're going to have.
Okay.
I think we've started to realize some of the price increases, because in a recent NFIB poll that we covered on the show, Bill Dunkelberg pointed out that his respondents were saying they're able to raise prices, which is a good thing for small business owners. That helps with our profitability. But so I think prices are coming up. We're seeing that, and that's contributing to inflation. But with the demand for workers, I think we're going to see an increase in payroll prices, and that's the thing the Fed watches just as ardently as they do the price controls. All right, stand by. Quick break. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Price. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Price is our guest, and she's with the Kiplinger Editors, and I encourage you to go to their website at kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. It's a great site. Joan, you guys have some pretty cool publications, don't you?
Sure do.
The Kiplinger Letter is the one we work out of. That comes every week. And you got some biweekly letters there, too, don't you?
We absolutely.
Well, go ahead. Tell us.
Oh, well, okay. Your gig, but I'll take it over. I don't mind. Well, as you know, the flagship is the Kiplinger Letter. I work for the Kiplinger Tax Letter, and then we also have the California Letter and the Agriculture Letter.
And those come every other week or
biweekly,
whichever way you prefer.
Either way.
And also, you got a magazine, too, don't you?
Absolutely. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine. Comes out every month.
Yeah, and you can get the letter, by the way, either of these letters, not the magazine, but the letters you can get by electronic. You can get them by email. They send you a link, and I go there and pick it up quickly. And I also get mine in the mail. They'll also mail it to you if you want, and I encourage you to check that out. And is the 30-day free trial still available, Joan?
The Blassingame free trial, absolutely.
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay, good deal. Joan, let's move over on page 3 and talk about Congress.
All right.
Don't underestimate the clout of a small band of Republicans. That sounds like an insurgent group, Joan.
Right.
What are you talking about there?
Well, the GOP moderates are, we call them, sitting in the catbird seat. They're, you know, it's sort of like Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. They're kind of the swing votes.
Moderate,
you have the polarized
moderate.
Left and right, and then you have the moderates in the middle kind of calling the shots.
Moderate. Is that like another name for a wimp?
Your words, not mine.
I also think about the term mugwump.
Okay.
You know, mugwump was a term that was used politically for the first time.
That talks about people who have their mug on one side and their wump on the other.
Well, exactly right. But they also, the effect of mugwumps was that they have the ability, they're a small group that has the ability to control the course of events.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about with these guys, isn't it?
Yes.
So they're kind of mugwumps.
Exactly.
And what are these mugs wumping about? What is it that they're going to be affecting?
Well, we're saying
taxes.
War-related issues, budget cuts, taxes, lots of stuff.
Well, the tax reform thing is a concern, and I know that I'm concerned about it because the question is whether they're going to extend some, like for example, the dividend and the capital gains rates, the cut 15% of a couple of years ago. Are they going to extend it or not, Joan?
Well, the good news on that is it doesn't expire on December 31st.
Right.
The things you mentioned.
It's got another year or so, doesn't it?
Right, which is good because there's other things that do expire on December 31st that it's looking like Congress will not have time to get that done, and we'll have to come back and reinstate them retroactively next year, which opens up a whole can of worms for your listeners, particularly in terms of the work opportunity tax credit and the welfare to work credit.
Right, right. Also, one of the things that you guys point out is that Kiplinger says Congress will fix the alternative minimum tax. What is that all about?
Well, as you know, the alternative minimum tax has started to bite lower and lower levels
millions
of income because it was not indexed for inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the problems has been that as Congress approved new and different tax breaks over the last few years, they were not exempted from the alternative minimum tax as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of add those back in when you're figuring your AMT.
Exactly.
But the so-called Band-Aid that we call it is this legislation that keeps expiring that allows those items to be exempted for purposes of the AMT. But that little Band-Aid is expiring at the end of this year.
And are they going to fix that, or are they going to extend
it? Well, they're going to fix it, but I don't think we're afraid they're not going to fix it till next year.
Hmm. Well, what needs to happen is the AMT needs to go away.
Totally, yes.
It needs to be banned.
That would help.
Totally, because it serves no purpose from its original purpose. It doesn't even exist and hasn't existed, folks. In about three weeks, the original purpose for which the AMT was created will have been eliminated for 20 years, Joan.
Yes.
We're still being taxed on something for something that wasn't even possible for us, you know, for the purpose of being taxed alternatively. That opportunity went away 20 years ago.
And well, I can make you feel even worse if you'd like.
Go ahead. I love this.
Well, members of Congress are saying, yeah, but to get rid of the AMT, it's very expensive. It would lose a lot of revenue. So they're talking about taking away other tax breaks or reducing tax breaks, such as the mortgage interest deduction, to pay for getting rid of a tax on people that shouldn't have been imposed on most people in the first place.
All in favor of the flat tax, please raise your hand.
Well,
you need to start reading Steve Forbes' book, folks. The Flat Tax Revolution, I think, is the title of his book. You need to start reading that. And, you know, his point is we ought to be able to send our tax return in on a postcard. What do you think, Joe?
Well, it would be nice.
Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
A little unrealistic, but it would be nice.
We've got to get this drug, which is the tax code, is the manipulation drug of politicians. We've got to get that out of their hands, and it won't be nearly as much fun for them, but we've got to get them to quit manipulating us with the tax code. And that's basically what they're doing right now. And you know what else, Joan?
What?
Not only are they doing these things for the wrong reasons, they're not even good at it. You know, I mean, they're not even good.
Yeah.
I think they don't even understand all the things that they're doing. It's like a bunch of, who was it? Was it Reagan? It says a bunch of drunken sailors.
Right.
He was so, I mean, I'd forgotten that somebody else has already said that. It's the thing that pops into your mind quick. It's a bunch of drunken sailors up there. It's amazing. Ten Tell. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us.
Go get yourself some cheap sunglasses.
Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and I hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And don't forget to check out the blog. I think you'll like it, and you can subscribe to it, too. The newsletter comes on Sunday by email, and the blog comes Monday through Friday if you want us to send it to you, or you can just go to the website and check it out every day. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the healthcare. There's some new technology, some technology news, I should say, that Congress is considering with regard to healthcare. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I never. Now I'm going to get on my high horse here. Electronic medical records. How hard is this? I mean, you're in a hospital. You see the doctor come in with a pen and paper. You say they've all got clipboards.
It's
everything is done by
for
paper.
God's sake.
Pardon me?
It's 2005, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, they're back in the, like, the 19th century, not even the 20th.
I know.
Do you
know.
Can you imagine what kind of a world it would be if you walk in the hospital, all your records are in there, all your drugs are in there?
Have you looked at the offices of a doctor lately, at all the files, all the paper files?
Yes, they
it
have
looks,
rooms and rooms
like
and rooms
It looks like the Library of
files.
Congress or something, doesn't it?
I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Haven't
they been prohibited from doing it electronically?
Well, I know that there's privacy concerns,
yeah.
But I still don't buy that. I think they're hiding behind that. But in any case,
says Congress will clear the way for electronic medical records. What that sounds like, it's against the law.
Well, no, they're allowing the government to set uniform national standards.
But
still, this should have been done a long time ago. I'm sorry.
We're talking about huge savings opportunities,
yeah.
Aren't we?
Yeah, and we save fewer deaths from medical errors.
I like that.
Yeah, and I also think drug interactions is an important issue, and I think you minimize that as well.
$140 billion a year savings by going electronic, Joan.
Yeah, you wonder how they come up with these figures.
And that's just eliminating duplicating testing.
Right.
And treatment. That's not
exactly.
Including the efficiencies of the electronics themselves.
Right.
Also, as you say, fewer deaths from medical errors. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to happen, but because, you know, Joan, electronics is not perfect. I mean, you can make plenty of mistakes electronically.
Sure, garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly. So,
right.
I don't see it as a great panacea, but I do think there's some efficiencies that could be arrived at. And I guess I didn't realize that there was some kind of a... Do you think that the reason they haven't done it is because they haven't had national standards?
And this item would imply that,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem. I do think the privacy issues and laws were a problem.
Yeah. Well, Joan, I guess I can also see if you're being treated in a hospital, it's an awful lot easier to leave paper clipped to a folder than it is to carry that around electronically. You know what I mean? We don't have the infrastructure is just not there.
Right.
And I've got electronics coming out my ears here at the office, but I still use a lot of paper, Joan.
Sure. Oh, so do I.
I mean, I use a paper calendar. A lot of people are using electronic. I use a paper calendar.
Not me. Do you own a BlackBerry?
Yes.
Oh, I used to respect you. I know that comes as a surprise.
Why is a BlackBerry me having a BlackBerry?
I'm disappointed.
What's the
okay,
deal?
Okay, well, let me ask you this. You can redeem yourself now. Are you addicted to your BlackBerry?
No, I'm not.
How many times a day do you check it?
I don't check it at all.
Okay.
Unless I'm traveling.
Well, there's people who check it constantly.
Oh, yeah, it's called a CrackBerry. Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
No, yeah, they call
them
CrackBerries. Yeah. No,
okay.
The only time I check my BlackBerry, if I'm not traveling, my BlackBerry is a telephone. And my PDA, contact information.
Okay.
In other words, if I need to call you at home or something like that, I can pop that number up pretty quickly. And the fact that it's a telephone.
Okay.
But I can also receive email. And I do receive email. But I never use it, even when I'm traveling around my home area. I never use that. I just wait till I get back to the office for
okay.
email.
Okay.
See, what the people are checking, they're checking email.
Yes.
And the only time I check that is when I'm on the road, and I check it maybe, you know, four or five times a day.
Okay, you're back on my good list.
Okay. But but you're right. I mean, I have been around people that couldn't even carry on a conversation without pulling their CrackBerry out of their holster.
Wow.
Every 30 seconds and checking
yeah.
it.
And then they get, you know, there's a disease of your thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
There's a condition. It's like BlackBerry thumb.
It's called CrackBerry thumb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, Joan, I'm glad I finally redeemed myself. Lord knows I need that. Hey, Joan, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Jim.
Yeah, I'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.